Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Scope. It's the only show that's part of this complete breakfast. I'm your announcer, Tony Partington. Coming up on this edition of The Scope...
Okay, Jared and Shane here for The Scope. What are we calling this season of movie
this
reviews?
This is the Spring Film Fling.
Spring Film Fling. I was not with you for the first one.
No, we kicked it off with our guest host Earl, and Olympus Has Fallen. And now here we are, film two of the Spring Film Fling.
We're almost summer. I mean, this is very much a summer film. Of course, we're talking about the...
Summer 2012.
The movie that clearly Steven Spielberg turned down to do. I mean, all the big directors are looking for it.
Couldn't fit it into a schedule.
G.I. Joe Retaliation.
Yes.
I would call this the pseudo-sequel to the... I don't even know when the first G.I. Joe came out. G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra.
I mean, it's a legitimate sequel. Yeah. They do try to tie it in, but it is a complete tonal shift.
Yes. So, a lot... For those of you that don't know what G.I. Joe is, it is a American, or at least in this version it's an American fighting force out to take down the threats that could destroy the world.
They're all specialized characters. Each one has a certain area of expertise and a code name to go with it.
And the baddies that they fight, at least in this, is a group called Cobra, which was established in the first movie, but now they're back, or they're reassembled to really cause a lot of damage.
Yeah, this time they're operating as ostensibly a special forces wing of the United States military. That's what they were led to believe.
So the first movie starred Channing Tatum and Damon Wayans.
That's right.
Or is it not Damon Wayans?
Damon Wayans as Ripcord.
Is it Damon Wayans or is it one of the other? Marlon Wayans.
Yeah, it was Marlon Wayans.
Marlon.
It was a Wayans.
And then a bunch of other characters who... really were not in the sequel. The only two that really carry over, at least on the good guys, would be Channing Tatum and Snake Eyes.
Right on.
And I guess in this, like you said, in this one, Cobra doesn't really exist except to run the White House and
they exist, but they've fallen on hard times a bit right at the beginning.
Or at least they're leaders.
Cobra Commander and Destro have both been captured and stowed away in some subterranean prison in Germany.
Yeah.
So subterranean that it's in international territory.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I didn't realize there were depth limits to international territory.
Apparently
but
so.
We're going to go.
It goes out and it goes down up.
Like a lot of the connective tissue of this film, you just sort of have to just go, okay, I'm just going to accept that and move on. Because if you try to think about it too hard, it will not make any sense and it will probably drive you crazy.
Yeah, I mean, just to kick it off, I think that people could very, 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 very easily hate this movie.
Yep.
And I don't blame them, but I sort of came out of it enjoying it. Oh, there's a bird sitting right in our studio.
Welcome to spring. He's totally hanging out.
That little bastard better not take a dump on my car.
There, and he's off.
Goodbye, bird.
That was a fun little diversion.
So the plot really is interesting in the sense that Cobra is back. They want to take over the world. Part of how they want to take over the world is to, A, destroy the G.I. Joe team through their insurgent plant, who is now Zartan, who is now the president.
He's taken over the president's look using the fancy, I'm assuming, the nanotechnology that was in the first film.
Which is mentioned, but used to a much better ends in this one.
They actually mentioned, the Nanomite War or something like that?
That was the first
one. There's a bit of a prologue at the beginning that sort of bridges the two films, and they talk about this whole after the Nanomite Wars or whatever. And so basically, all the events that were in the first film are acknowledged, but pretty much dismissed, and we're going to move past that.
Dismissed as lames, and... That would be correct.
So we probably don't need to cover the whole plot. I mean, basically, you've covered it. Zartan has taken over the presidency, looks like the president, and is basically using Cobra forces as special forces. They send the Joes on a mission to retrieve some nuclear warheads in Pakistan.
From Pakistan.
And then while the Joes are waiting for their evac from their rally point
or
whatever.
I call it extraction.
Extraction, their exfil. Cobra forces show up early and basically rain hellfire down upon them from helicopters, and they're trying to wipe out the Joes, but of course our plucky crew survives.
A lot of Joes are killed, but they are nameless and maybe code nameless.
Yes, other than Duke.
It's a huge
unlike
spoiler.
Unlike the original G.I. Joe cartoon film, Duke does not survive.
My feeling is that they leave it open enough where he could still be alive.
Potentially. We'll see.
It's Cobra comes and grabs his body, there are ways around it if they want the superstar Channing Tatum in the film.
Look, given the framework that this film exists in, anything is possible.
Yes.
Literally. They just sent him to the mountains, Shane, to heal.
Yeah. That's a very inside joke. And the other thing is, like, some of the other key players in the original movie, like Hawk, played by Dennis Quaid, you've got Scarlet, you've got Ripcord, which I hope is dead. I mean, there's a lot, pretty much every other character is not even mentioned, so they could have left the team, whatever.
Yeah, there's plenty of characters, but, okay, so getting back to the whole plot, I mean, we don't need to cover a lot. Basically, so Joes are presumed dead except for a few, and so obviously they go underground and rally forces and try to come up with a plan to take down Cobra, who has infiltrated the government and is trying to basically do some giant super plan. They have a fancy
death satellite,
perfectly suitable to a cartoon film series of death satellites, and so on and so forth. And you know, you can sort of start to paint the picture from there.
One of the Joe's major points of action would be to find the original Joe Colton, played by Bruce Willis, in a strange.
Living in some retirement community somewhere, apparently not needing too much cupboard space.
But he does keep grenades under the silverware tray.
Right, and also mixed in with his pears.
I do like one of the shelves where, there's a whole scene where he's got his cache of weapons cache, and they're going through all the cabinets, and the cabinets are about 2 inches deep for like his food, and then behind it there's
you can fit a couple cans of Campbell's in there.
If that, it. I mean, it's like his is like.
Oh, I'm not talking chunky soup. That won't fit. Just regular small condensed soup.
Fruit by the foot and probably ramen noodles are the only thing this guy can eat.
He's living by himself. What are you talking about?
He eats out all the time. Yeah. He's probably a Red Lobster.
My guess. No, doesn't need the covered space. Look, so, I mean, the film is full of gee whiz technology and fun military sequences. One of the set pieces is as you've seen in the trailers, it's a ninja fight on a mountain, on the side of a mountain.
By far the best scene is
it's fantastic.
Outrageous and stupid as it is, because they're running on the side of the mountain with cords.
But it's
still visually really impressive. And they kind of get around it by, there's zip lines, so you can't cut the zip line that you're on because you'll kill everybody. And then when the ninjas are actually fighting on their ropes going back and forth, it's definitely an issue of high ground. You know, they're coming at each other at the same time, so it's who gets the position.
I'm not overly concerned about it being realistic. Given the film.
Yeah. So let's approach this from two perspectives.
You have
Let's compare it to maybe more than two perspectives.
Two perspectives would be talk about it as a regular film.
Yeah.
You know, in the context of what makes a good film versus a G.I. Joe film.
Okay.
And a person who's a fan of G.I. Joe.
Sure.
Because you're going to have two different reactions to this film.
And I think you'd be remiss if you don't compare it to the original as well.
Okay, but yeah. I think that fits into the G.I. Joe mold, because I think in both camps would consider the first film a complete failure.
Yes. So let's talk about it as a film on its own first.
Right.
It's not a great film. I mean, let's be very, very honest. It plays very fast and loose with all the rules. I mean, it plays by the action movie rules, but it doesn't bring anything new to the table.
There's giant plot holes. There's big loops
terrible
of
acting.
Logic. I mean,
it's silly.
It is silly, especially
it's catchphrasy.
Especially when you start getting into the ninja lore. I mean, and we're not even talking real ninja lore. We're talking G.I. Joe ninja lore. You start getting into that. I think if you come into the table uninformed about how that whole thing functions in the G.I. Joe world, you're going to be lost. You might just be given to a big what the fuck.
And they even change things within that. I mean, you have things like Reza playing
the RZA.
Playing the blind master, which is the worst. He's the worst actor, and we get it. He likes action movies, but it's stunt casting that does not work.
Yeah, it was a little weird.
I think that you've got Bruce...
No more weird than some of the other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, what? You've got army men and ninjas. How do these guys play together? Obviously, in the comic books, because that's really where it's coming from, because it's not even in the cartoon.
Sure, yeah.
It is a huge part of the story.
Yep.
I mean, it is...
The relationship between Storm Shadow and Snake Eyes and Jinx and...
Yep.
Yeah.
And even in the comic, it was Scarlet, who is obviously not in here.
Right.
So you have this whole thing, which, as Jared said, does not make any sense if you don't understand the comic book or any of the G.I. Joe lore. You've got Bruce Willis, who is cast. It's stunt casting. I mean, he doesn't really have to be there. He doesn't really add much to it except his Bruce Williness.
Pretty much. Yeah. I mean, he's playing Bruce Willis. I mean, he's Joe Colton.
He's dripping charisma, is what he is.
He's got about three or four scenes. It's not like he's a huge part of the film, so.
Yeah. The movie does very Michael Bay-esque things, like when the Joes are assembling their team, you've got to get the old wily veterans who sure. who clearly are probably Vietnam vets or probably. Something like that that are in the movie, which Michael Bay did exactly in the Transformers movies.
Sure.
It's bombastic. I mean,
it's not going over any new ground.
No, it's a toy. it's a toy movie that doesn't have the budget of Transformers. So things are a bit hollow and thin.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? That's okay. It probably makes it a little more charming to not have an extra $50 million to make it big and as much of a spectacle. So it has to be smaller. So I will give it, I would say the understatement in which it's presented, which isn't very understated, but it is better than if you would go balls to the wall. So
what do we like about this movie?
So I think what I liked about the movie ties into how we relate to it as a G.I. Joe film.
Right.
So as a film by itself, I don't really like it that much, but having the history, the fact that it comes from a toy line, that comes from a cartoon, that comes from a comic book line,
yep.
It's charming. It has a G.I. Joe charm to it. The director is John Chu, who is known for Step Up 3D. I believe that's
and
his
the
big...
Justin Bieber documentary.
Yeah,
is why a lot of fans were like, "Whoa, why did they choose him?"
I would say that he gets it. Overall, he understands G.I. Joe. I think that...
And given the interviews that I've read from him recently, that he definitely understands the material. And he's a fan of it. It was a fan of it as a kid. Yeah. So you can feel that fandom come through in the screen. Is he a great filmmaker? Probably not.
Yeah, he's okay.
But he definitely was...
like.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't... As a G.I. Joe fan, it's very watchable.
Yeah.
And you're not going to be super frustrated most of the time... like you were watching the first one.
He's saddled with the history of the first film, which to this day I say they should have just started over. They should have just reset it and forget it.
To use a sports term, take a mulligan on that one.
Yeah, it was the first one is terrible in comparison to this.
You could have just recast and started over and not have to. Yeah, it's
and even the even
because maybe you have Duke around, but you cast someone who isn't such as a big star now, like Channing Tatum. Get someone else who's going to stick around for a few films,
or you keep Duke as an older character, and you have Channing Tatum as Flint or something like that.
Sure.
That makes more sense. You know what I mean? It doesn't. It seems a bit silly to be beholden to that old history.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, they really fly through it pretty quickly.
It doesn't waste a lot of time.
And it ends up being a Joe film on its own. I appreciated the ninja stuff.
I loved the ninja stuff.
I mean...
as silly as it was, the ninja fight on the mountain... the one thing I didn't like was the whole... Storm Shadow gets burned at some point early in the film, and Cobra Commander immediately says, send him to the mountains to heal.
That's his line.
There's no explanation. They just send him to the mountains. You just have to accept, apparently, there's something there. And there's some old ninja lady there who's using some technology to heal him. So, you know,
looks
whatever.
Like she's something out of a Studio Ghibli film.
But the whole fight scene in the mountain is fantastic. Mm-hmm. I like the characters' designs for the most part. The Cobra Commander upgrade is fantastic.
Yeah.
They do a... Again, they probably should have not even bothered with the first film's history at all, but they managed to bridge it, which is interesting. Yeah.
They even show the original Cobra Commander look.
Yeah.
Which, once you see it in comparison to this, which, this is silly. I mean, let's face it, he's a leather guy in a silver mask. It's silly, but compared to what it was, it's way better.
And they sort of explain the mask, and ignore the fact that it's a guy wearing a silver mask, in the real world, And, you know, you would normally look at that and go, wow, that's really dumb. As a G.I. Joe fan, you look at him and go, wow, that's a really cool take on Cobra Commander. Yeah. He might have been a little taller, but he seemed a little short. But
yeah, Snake Eyes seems like he's about 5 foot two in this film.
I thought the Firefly character design was really done well.
Yeah.
He was big.
except what Jared and I commented on. Whenever these people are in fights, they have to take off their mask, which seems to be a universal thing in any movie. The Avengers, they do it.
What's the
point?
I mean, you kind of accept that happens, but it seems weird in a film that sort of tries to hew as closely as possible to a comic book cartoon G.I. Joe, where the mask would not come off. And now, granted, Firefly didn't take it off in the end fight scene, so...
Yeah. And but Storm Shadow takes it off. You know, they all sort of take it off. You know, and you don't even recognize these people. They're nobody actors in the grand scheme of things. It's not like it's it's Tony Stark. It's or somebody like that to Chris Hemsworth that you would recognize.
Right.
So you can't put him in as whatever. So that seems a little bit silly.
I like. Other than Snake Eyes and I guess Jinx to some extent, the other G.I. Joe characters sort of have more of a generic military feel, which is probably realistic.
Yeah.
I kind of wish they would have been a little bit more individualized.
Yeah. Which maybe they will. At least they're not wearing nano suits or robot suits.
It's an improvement to that extent. I mean. Roadblock was pretty much, a military guy.
He wore a camo shirt and orange pants. So
he's pretty much on task. Flint, maybe you give him his little beret, but...
Which they do at the end. It's a dress uniform.
He seems like a younger version of Flint, so... Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's nitpicky shit.
It is, but, I mean, the ninjas were ninjas.
Yeah.
You know, and the Snake Eyes, the improvement is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks really good.
I think the mask is a little helmety for my taste. And he's got a seam down his center of his mouth, but like you said, in comparison.
No lips.
It's not even in the same
ballpark. Head seems a little big, but the problem is you got to put a human's head in there. So, yeah. Maybe it is a little too helmety and should have been more of just a streamlined, slip-on mask with a visor.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I guess there's one thing that bothers me. I mean, okay, there's several things that bother me. But the one thing I'm going to talk about is the need, not only in this film, but in other genre films of this style, the need to kill off all these characters.
Yeah.
There's only so many prominent Cobra bad guys, and now they've killed off several of them in this film. And so it makes me wonder if there is a sequel, who's left?
Yeah. Major Blood, the twins. You can bring back. So here, I'm gonna give you a little bit of color on this. Yes. So I was reading an interview with the director John Chu, talking about the fact that you don't have Scarlet and you do lose some of these villains. But he said, you could approach it from the standpoint that these are code names. These aren't necessarily people. So you could have another Scarlet. You could have another Baroness. Sure. It's just people filling a role. So I think that if you could go back to that, so it's almost like you're continuing to reset the universe.
I guess. I don't think that's really authentic to the source material, though, because I never got the indication that the code names were reusable in the comic book world.
At least in the G.I. Joe team, they didn't show any of these people dying, so it could be anyone. You could bring these characters back.
Absolutely.
In Cobra, I mean, you also, with Cobra, you also have to understand that these are evil people doing evil things. And you have to have some sort of payoff because you can't kill Cobra Commander.
You can't kill Cobra Commander and they can't all just escape.
Yeah.
Otherwise it's
like you're watching it for nothing. So you have to have some sort of, I don't even know what the word, resolution or denouement or whatever it is.
You gotta have some retaliation, Shane.
You have to have that. my biggest thing, Jared, and this is going to make me sound like an old man.
Here we go. Old man Shane coming out.
I struggle with, in this day and age, I struggle with the gunplay, and I struggle with the fact that, they just destroyed London.
The fact that London's going to have a bad year, it sounds like. It sounds like there's some other films. London's going to have a bad year in the future. Yeah. Star Trek Into Darkness is probably going to have a little trouble with London as well.
But so, anyway. I mean, that I struggle
with... Sorry, London, bad year.
I struggle with that, maybe in a way that I wouldn't have 10 years ago or 15 years ago. That's why I like the superhero movies a little bit better, or maybe like the sci-fi Star Wars type stuff, because they're not shooting people with real guns, with real bullets.
And I agree, and especially in the context of there being, a group of five or six kids sitting behind us, and sort of, you can almost feel, I maybe even heard them a little bit, sort of cheering at some of the violence, and it's like... I mean, it's like, at the same time, it's a movie and you want to have some fun and portray some, you know, action like this. But, yeah, it could be a bit much. Maybe, I mean, was this PG-13?
It has to be PG-13.
Yeah, I think some of the, maybe parents should probably not let their 5 or 6 year old kids come see these kind of movies. But I'm not a parent, so do what you want.
Yeah, I mean,
but I agree with you. It does. As I get older, I feel a little bit more averse to just the wanton gunplay and violence and sort of just death and murder without any real repercussions or you know, morality apparently evident at all. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have to destroy London, and we're not giving anything away. It's in the trailer, so.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, beyond that, the acting is what it is. The movie is what it is.
I think Dwayne Johnson, otherwise known as The Rock, was really good as Roadblock. I mean, for as much as he was given to do.
Yeah, I mean, that's like...
I think he's a freaking cartoon already in real life, practically, with given his just insane proportions.
Yeah.
You know, he just...
He's not
fills the role just fine.
Let's be real; he doesn't really reflect any roadblock that has existed in cartoon or comic book.
I don't quite remember what his story is.
Like. Yeah, I mean, trust me, he doesn't. But it's a solid casting. He's very charismatic, and he pulls the role off well. The rest of everyone else, even.
And I think
Lady J, Adrian,
the scenes between him and Channing Tatum, which I assume were probably some part of the reshoots that they added.
The only thing that they reshot, from what I understand, is the or not reshot, they added was the video game scene where they played. Everything else, I think, was already done.
It's a good scene. It's a fun scene and shows you know the charm of a Channing Tatum for sure.
Yeah. Which he wouldn't have been really that way in the original cut of this film. He would have been much more the boss,
straight up, leader type. So, I don't know, whether or not it fits into the film is another question, but it was a fun little sequence on its own. So, gosh, how much more? I was surprised we had this much to talk about.
Yeah. So, I think we have to give it a review. I can't give it a score based on, as a G.I. Joe film. I have to give it a score based on, as a film on its own, with a caveat. That's how I'm
viewing. Do you want to do it that way, or do we want to do two separate scores?
No, maybe we'll do two separate scores, then.
We need to decide now, though.
Let's do it. Let's give it two scores.
Two scores. Okay. One score will be as a standard film, judged in the context.
The Scope score is 1.5 star.
So there's your score for if it just a regular film, if you put this up against the likes of a Lincoln or a Les Mis. Keep in mind, we gave Les Mis a 1.
Yeah. I did not. I mean, I did even as a.
The Scope score is 3 stars.
So there you go.
3 stars as a G.I. Joe fan. So I think the takeaway is, if you like G.I. Joe, go see the movie.
Yeah.
You'll be happy.
If you're familiar with it.
If you're not, don't bother.
Don't bother. That's why it's released in March or April or whenever it is. Yeah. So there
maybe we'll get a sequel. I don't know. I mean, it seems like they'll leave the door open.
Yeah. They're projecting it to do pretty decent business this weekend. Okay. So we'll see, you know, if it's got legs and how it will translate in the foreign markets.
We saw it in 2D, so we can't comment on the quality of the 3D conversion, which was their big excuse for delaying it over the summer.
And I didn't see a lot of scenes that would require it.
No.
Maybe 2.
Could have seen fireflies coming at you in 3D, Shane.
Don't need it.
That would have been exciting.
Don't need it. So let's wrap this review up. Movie 2 of the Scope.
The Spring Film Fling.
No, I'm just going to let you say it, because if I would say it, I would stumble over it.
Spring Film Fling. I'm getting used to it. When I first came up with the name, I'm like, ooh, that's a tough one. But the more I say it, the more it starts to get into my muscle memory.
When does the Spring Film Fling stop, and when does the summer movie
summer
madness?
Probably starts, first weekend in May? When does Iron Man come out?
It's right around that time.
That's when the summer unnamed... film season begins.
So we've got a month. We've got a month to go.
Earl threw out a name in the first review that I don't know. That's a bit of a mouthful.
What was it? I forget.
I forget. I'd have to go back and review it, but I don't know. There we go.
There we go. We'll wrap it up. Thanks for listening to The Scope, and we'll be sending more stuff at you in a future time.
Awesome.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, we find ourselves once again at the end. I hope you've enjoyed our time together. I know I have. Fear not, Scope faithful. Days shall pass as if they were but a moment. And Jared, Adam, and Shane will return with another thrilling episode. Until then, send your comments to comments@thescopeshow.com or leave a voicemail message by dialing
612-21-SCOPE. That's 612-217-2673.
Thanks for listening, faithful fans. This is Tony Partington saying arrivederci. Tune in next time to another terrific edition of The Scope.